Welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our team's goal is to present science-based information about gardening and all things nature in New York's Hudson Valley. Host Gene and Tim, along with team members Teresa and Linda, are master gardener volunteers for New York's Columbia and Greene counties. So if you're interested in gardening or nature or nuggets of information about what's happening outside your door, settle in. Enjoy the conversation. Whatever the season, we have something to say.
Hello, and welcome back to Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. I'm Jean Thomas.
And I'm Teresa Golden, filling in for Tim.
Today we're having a conversation with Miriam Rubin, author of a book called Tomatoes. That's a pretty irresistible topic, and we wondered what specifically she'd be writing about. Happily for us, it's a cookbook. Frankly, you're probably pretty tired of hearing all the ways to choose and grow the plants. Let's cut to the chase here and get to the eating part.
Welcome, Miriam. Our crack research team, specifically Jean, did some background checking on you, and we're very impressed. Your Hudson Valley roots are genuine. You're a graduate of the world-famous Culinary Institute of America, or the CIA, located in Hyde Park, and worked in the Four Seasons restaurant in New York City when women in the professional kitchen were a novelty.
See, well, I'm pretty new as a dweller in the Hudson Valley. My husband and I moved here 4 years ago. And before that, we lived and I gardened in southwestern Pennsylvania.
I'm jealous.
Did you go to the culinary?
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay.
No, all those things are true. All those things are true, but we didn't live here then. I went to the culinary when I was very young. I moved to New York City. And many years later, I met and married my husband, and we moved to southwestern Pennsylvania. We met in the Hudson Valley, actually, in Chatham. And now we live in the area.
Wonderful.
Oh, they met cute.
We did. We met very cute.
Oh, tell me.
It's not about tomatoes.
That's okay.
Well, let's see. It was my birthday, and I was sitting at a picnic table at the old Chatham Sheep Herding Festival. It was an antique fair. And there was this little boy that came and sat down at the table, and he looked glum, and there was a man standing near him who was smiling at me. So I smiled, and it turned out to be his best friend's son, and that was my husband, and we met and talked, and then it was before emails, so we wrote letters, and then a year later we got married.
Nice!
And that six-year-old boy is now 30-something.
Is he still glum?
No, not so glum.
Oh, good.
Not so glum.
You recently, your pieces have been something for Cheese Professor?
I wrote a recent story for the Cheese Professor. I wrote one for Edible Berkshire, which is a new magazine now.
What's the Cheese Professor?
The Cheese Professor is a website, and it's everything about cheese. It's about cheese contests and cheese stores around the country and maybe the world. And different kinds of cheeses and cheese recipes. It's cheese-centric.
I'm so glad we're having lunch after this interview.
But you can put a tomato on that cheese sandwich.
Always, always. Okay, so you became a food writer and editor.
Yes.
And a columnist for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
Yes.
You wrote a couple of books. Formerly, you were a columnist for the Digital Rural Intelligence magazine. And I hear you teach cooking classes as well.
I do. I teach At Home Chef in Hillsdale, New York, and I teach a very, very fun tomato class there usually at the end of August.
That sounds good. We'll make sure we post the link to the website for you.
Oh, great.
And I hear your vegetable garden's pretty impressive, which it has to be if you're writing about tomatoes.
I grow a lot of tomatoes, and I grow other things as well, cucumbers, and I don't grow green beans because the beetles always seem to find me. So I don't grow those, but I grow just about everything else. Garlic and onions and herbs. And
you've got the regular, you know,
yeah.
Or the genuine green thumb.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good. Well, we love your book. We
Thank
followed
you.
Your example with our own Master Gardener cookbook by intermixing growing and historical tidbits among the recipes. Your book is published by the University of North Carolina Press, and the introduction is oriented to the production and enjoyment of tomatoes in the South. I have to confess, I had to keep interrupting my reading to calm myself and remind myself that we need patience up in the Northeast waiting for the soil temperatures to warm up in order to plant tomatoes in the garden. Could you explain why certain types of tomatoes do better in the South than in the North?
Well, obviously, it's a longer season in the South. There are some places in the lower South where they have two seasons, and that's kind of amazing, but that's not going to happen to us. It's the warmth, it's the soil, it's the terroir. It's kind of interesting because there are certain types of tomatoes called Creole tomatoes, and they're grown around New Orleans. Now, it's not a particular variety. It's just a tomato grown in that region. And you can say, well, that's the same thing as Jersey tomatoes, because it's not a particular type of tomato, but it's tomatoes grown in that region, in the soil, in that particular climate with the sun and the, I guess in certain places, the ocean breezes. There's a friend of mine, a Facebook friend of mine, who is, he calls himself Jersey Tomato, and he is trying to bring back certain varieties of lost Jersey tomatoes. And he has a website, Iconic Jersey Tomatoes. So he's given me some seeds to grow. His idea is that everybody grows them and then saves the seeds and gives them away for free or gives them to seed libraries in order to keep them growing.
So he's reinventing heirloom tomatoes.
Yes, yes, he is.
You know, that's become such a big thing that there's all different categories mm-hmm. of heirloom tomatoes. The one I think of is the... Well, the mortgage lifter is my favorite.
You've had success with that here.
No, I've never grown it. I just love okay. the name.
Do you know the story of the mortgage lifter?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Because it's a great story. And there's so many heirlooms with those kinds of wonderful stories. But
For a listener's benefit, why don't you tell the story?
Okay. His name was Radiator Charlie. I think he was from West Virginia. And he had a radiator repair shop at the bottom of a hill, which was very smart because truck drivers would drive down the hill and then their radiators would overheat so he could replace them. So that's how he got the name Radiator Charlie. But he also sold tomato plants for $1 a piece. And by selling the tomato plants, he was able to pay off his mortgage.
Now, this was $1 a piece during the Depression.
Yes.
When that was like, what, a week's pay?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, so that's there's a lot of those good stories.
There are.
There's a million different kinds of brandy wines.
There are. But if you go to Southern Exposure Seeds, I think you'll find, or Seed Savers Exchange, I think you'll find the genuine brandy wine. And the genuine one is pink, not red. But there are also green ones, and they come from different strains. It gets complicated.
So the definition of an heirloom mm-hmm. tomato is what?
Heirloom tomatoes are like family heirlooms. They're like your grandmother's china. There are three types of heirloom tomatoes. They're family heirlooms, and they're really just that. These are seeds that were carried over by immigrants in pockets or in suitcases. There were seeds that were grown for years in a region by a particular family or in a particular area. They have evocative names and stories like Paul Robeson or Arkansas Traveler, Kellogg's Breakfast, which comes from Michigan, Mrs. Houseworth, which is a family heirloom from southern Pennsylvania and originally from Italy. And there's another one, T.C. Jones from Cumberland County, Kentucky. In fact, more and more of them found every year. It's quite amazing. The second type of heirloom is a created heirloom. And a good example is Green Zebra. It's a cross between two different tomatoes. And usually one of those tomatoes is an heirloom. Sometimes a created heirloom can be made from two different heirlooms. There's one that I've been growing. It's called Cherokee Carbon. And I'm very happy with it. It's a cross between Cherokee purple tomatoes and carbon tomatoes. The third classification of an heirloom tomato, and again, I haven't said, but these are all open pollinated, which means that if you save the seeds and plant them the next year, they should grow true. Not always, but they should. So the third type of classification of heirloom tomatoes are any tomatoes that were sold by seed companies before 1940. And in 1949, Big Boy Tomato was invented by Burpee Seeds. And that was really the first hybrid. And people loved it. Farmers loved it and gardeners loved it because it was this big, round, red, smooth tomato, not like the lumpy heirlooms. So it kind of took over. But since it was a hybrid, the seeds couldn't be saved and they couldn't be planted. So you had to buy seeds. And that changed everything until we started to think about flavor and taste. And now there's an explosion of heirlooms.
Because there's a definite difference in taste between heirlooms and, shall we call, the normal commercial tomatoes that we get.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we spent about 30 years liking tasteless tomatoes because they were pretty.
And they shipped well, and that's what you got.
Yeah. So now people's taste buds regrew, apparently, and everybody's back in what I call real tomatoes.
Well, it's an explosion in all sorts of gardening and farming ideas. You know, flavor and differences and beautiful colors that people are attracted to. It's a wonderful thing that's happening. It's really changed. And it's changed since I wrote the book to now. When I go to the Green Market in Union Square, I can't believe the variety of tomatoes. And they weren't there 15 years ago, 20 years ago.
Well, it's obvious that today you're among gardeners and eaters. So let's get to specifics. So Miriam, is there a specific tomato that grows better in this region than others?
I have had good luck with a few different tomatoes. And it's interesting because they seem to come from colder climates. So I've had good luck with Krankovic, which was from Yugoslavia, with Moskovic, which is an heirloom from Russia. And with both Cherokee Purple and Cherokee Carbon. But also there's a tomato which I thought was an heirloom, but it isn't. And it's called Martha Washington. And it has wonderful flavor. It's a pink tomato, and it's very close in flavor to a Brandywine. Not the same, but very close. And it's a hybrid, and it grows well, and it looks like an heirloom, and I would really recommend it. And I've been very happy with it. I also grow Juliets, and those do very well. And I haven't grown black plum here. I used to grow them in Pennsylvania, and they're so prolific, I just couldn't stand it anymore. But I think they would do well here, and they'd make good sauce.
What's your favorite tomato?
I mean, first of all, I would use any tomato for anything, because in the end, it's just a tomato, and that's wonderful. But I try to stick to certain varieties or certain types for certain things. But my favorite tomato is Brandywine, and probably everybody says that. I think it has the best combination of tart and sweet. It's got a silky, velvety texture, and I know that it's summer when they finally ripen. And that's like, oh, that's the flavor. And it's amazing.
Do you have favorites for different uses?
Yes. If I was making sauce, I will reach for an Amish paste or an ox heart. And those are the types I grow for sauce, or even Juliet, which is a baby plum. And I use plum-type tomatoes, paste-type tomatoes for sauce because they have thicker walls and less juice. If I was making a salad, I would use a mixture of tomatoes. I would use Brandywine, and I would use any of this. I call them sloppy slicers, and Purple Cherokee, and then I'd maybe throw in a few Sun Golds for something tart as well.
And color. Yeah.
And excitement.
Okay. Now, we can't always get the heirlooms. Sometimes we're kind of stuck with the supermarket stuff. You got any counseling on how to deal with those when we're into the plastic tomato season, as I call it?
Yeah, I know that season. Well, Campari tomatoes are sometimes not too bad.
Are they the ones on a string?
No. They're sold in a plastic box.
Okay.
And they're called Campari. And cherry tomatoes are usually not too bad, but the trick is, I mean, sometimes you just need a slice of tomato in a sandwich, but the real trick is maybe to give them a little heat, to saute them, to roast them. One thing I love to do with small pear tomatoes or plum tomatoes or even grape tomatoes, which are usually pretty bad, is I saute them with garlic and ginger till they just soften and become juicy, and then I hit them with a little bit of honey. And that's a recipe from my book called Ginger Tomatoes. And it's one that I serve a lot at farmers markets or demos. And people love it. And it works great with out-of-season tomatoes. But a little heat, maybe a tiny bit of something sweet like brown sugar and an herb and maybe garlic will pretty much perk up any sad-looking tomato.
Now, One of the things I see when I go to other people's houses, they put the tomatoes in the refrigerator. Why?
Because that's what they think they're supposed to do. It's a terrible thing to do, and they lose flavor, and they just get cold. Well, another thing people do is they put tomatoes on the windowsill. And that's not good either. Tomatoes and a slightly... I don't pick tomatoes when they're dead ripe. I don't like tomatoes when they're dead ripe. I pick them when they just start to turn. They're almost there. And I bring them inside and I put them in the garage on a table. I lay them out flat and then they continue to ripen because that's what they're supposed to do. They don't need to be in the sun because they could actually get too hot. So no sun and no cold. Room temperature or a little cooler in a dark space maybe if you can and they'll be fine.
And if you pick them early, the odds are they won't get any insects or other diseases as well.
Or the critters won't take a bite out of them, which is a lot of what I'm trying to avoid. You know, bites out when they get perfectly right. Somebody else is watching it also.
And they take one bite.
One bite.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have other storage tips?
Well, at the end of the season, I freeze them. I will cut them up in pieces and put them in a bag. I might peel them and put them in a freezer bag. I don't can them whole these days as much as I used to, but I do make tomato puree, and I both can it and freeze it. I make large batches of tomato sauce, and I freeze that. But what I also do when I get really tired is I wash them and I put them in a Ziploc bag, and I put them in the freezer.
Wait a minute. You put naked tomatoes in the refrigerator without cooking them?
Naked tomatoes in the freezer, yes.
Yes, oh.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I could use them frozen. I could let them thaw a little bit and cut them up and pull the skins off. Or I can let them thaw completely on a plate and then just pull the skin off. And then you have this wonderful tomato essence. And it's the best stuff in the world.
I may have to start cooking.
You do. You get really tired at the end of the season. It's like, I can't make any more sauce. I just can't deal with it. And then you can freeze them and you could make sauce later.
Well, I know you grow your own tomatoes in Columbia County. In your book, you write about friends planning summer visits for when the Brandywine tomatoes are ripe. Do you have any growing tips for us? I'm always looking for anything to get a better crop.
When I plant them, I dig a really deep hole. I put compost in and sometimes a little organic tomato fertilizer. I often plant them when it's almost evening and it's kind of dark because I don't want to put them out in the bright sun. Don't water the leaves, have a really good cage, and then I never prune them, I never pull off the suckers, I leave them alone. I talk to them, I check them, I look at them, I commune with them, I worry about them. And if they're looking a little peaked, I might give them a little more compost or sometimes a little bit of fertilizer, but that's pretty much all I do.
Now, are these mostly determinate?
Indeterminate.
Indeterminate. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you don't pull the suckers off for better air circulation or anything along those lines?
If they were just making leaves and it's late in the season and everything's getting crowded, I might trim them a little bit. If it was towards the end of the season and nothing was ripening, I would trim off the top of the plant. And that way you encourage them to ripen instead of keep making more leaves. But generally, no. Try to space them enough so they're getting enough air and light.
Canned and jarred tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Now, we already know that there are not going to be any homemade canned or jarred tomatoes except from the pity of my neighbors in my kitchen. Are there commercial ones? Or how would we know, looking at a shelf full of commercial tomatoes, which ones would be better?
I like Red Pack. I don't see them very often around here. I'm not quite sure
those
why.
Those are canned, right?
Yeah, it's a
okay,
can.
I remember those. Yeah.
Also, people really like Glenmuir, the roasted tomatoes, the fire-roasted organic tomatoes. They're quite sweet. And then there's San Marzano whole tomatoes. Those have gotten really pricey. But I would choose those. There's a brand, Cento, that's good. But when they say they're San Marzano, yet they're diced, often they're not really San Marzano.
Ooh.
Yes.
Good to know.
Do you grow anything to be a, quote, companion for the tomato?
Besides myself?
Yeah.
Yes, I grow basil, of course. I grow a couple types of basil. Is it Genovese? Is that Genoa basil? And a large lettuce leaf basil. And I also might grow some Thai basil over in another corner of the garden. And I also grow marigolds. I was doing a little research on this, and I saw that there were some blogs that were recommending onions or garlic. And that was weird because you pull them out in July and the tomatoes aren't ripened yet. So that didn't make a lot of sense to me. And then also lavender and chives are supposed to be good. but those are perennials. So you're supposed to move your tomatoes at least a little bit every year. So that just didn't make a whole lot of sense. And then I found out about borage, and we do grow borage in our wild garden, and borage gets very wild. So I might try it, but it gets kind of crazy. You know, it gets large, so I don't know if there's enough room, but it's a fun thing to grow. And I also read something about mint, but of course you can't plant mint with your tomatoes because you'll always have the mint. So that's not good. So what they said was to put it in a pot and then place it near your tomatoes. I'm not sure that's going to work.
And then give it to a neighbor.
Yeah, then give it to a neighbor, along with the zucchini.
Yes, yes. Sneaking in with the zucchini. Okay, well, we already discussed your classes, so Teresa and I have signed up. We don't care when.
We do a tomato tasting at my classes.
Oh.
So people get to taste the differences in tomatoes, because if you don't grow a lot of them, you don't realize how different they can be, and it's nice to compare them to each other.
Is that accompanied with a nice glass of wine?
Well, it's not accompanied with a nice glass of wine, but there is a demo usually for my tomato galette, and people get to learn how to make that, and another couple of recipes. It could be ginger tomatoes. It could be tomatoes with brown butter. It could be my open-faced tomato pie, which I gave you a slice of earlier.
Oh, we are anticipating that beyond belief.
And I'm doing another one at the Berkshire Botanical Gardens this year, and that's very exciting.
Wow, your classes sound wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. Everybody has fun.
Now, we're sorry that you didn't get to meet Tim, and Tim's going to be even sorrier that he didn't get to meet you.
Me too.
Tim said to be sure to ask about some recipes. He thought I was neglecting recipes. It's a lie. But I fell in love with one sandwich in your cookbook called the Vicksburg Sandwich. I think it's maybe all about the ambiance rather than the food, but could you tell us about that?
No, it's definitely about the food. It's from Vicksburg, Mississippi. And these tomato sandwiches are served at ladies' luncheons or teas or even at maybe at a funeral luncheon. And you find tomatoes that are medium-sized and round, and they have to be peeled. It's bad form not to. And then you cut out rounds of bread. They're the same size as the tomatoes, a tomato slice. The tomatoes are sliced into rounds. And you make homemade mayonnaise with a little bit of either chopped onion or onion juice in it to season it. And you spread that on the bread and put the tomato on there and a little salt and pepper. And that's it. And you can also make them on whole wheat bread, which in the South is often referred to as light bread. And you could maybe add a little Tabasco or some hot sauce or a little chili powder to the mayonnaise to make those a little different.
Oh, yum.
But they're delicate. You know, they're not like the sloppy tomato sandwiches that you have to eat over the sink. These are what you'd eat with, you know.
With your gloves and your crinolines on.
With your gloves on. I don't know about the crinolines, but with your gloves on. With your gloves on. I was talking to somebody about tomato sandwiches the other day, and I mentioned that there is a toasting zone. North of the Mason-Dixon line, people toast their bread for tomato sandwiches, and south, they do not. And she was aghast. She said, they put them on raw bread? And I don't think of it as raw.
That's like eating peeps. Raw bread.
Raw bread. It was an interesting observation. It's not raw. It's just style.
Well, we always like to close out our interviews with a personal note of hope. So what are you hopeful for the future when it comes to tomatoes?
Good tomato seasons, longer tomato seasons in Columbia County, earlier tomato seasons. For tomatoes, may they continue. May we continue to find more and more heirlooms and be able to buy better tasting tomatoes year-round.
Amen.
That sounds wonderful.
Well, thank you. That was really fun. We're going to have to do this, once a week?
Okay. Thank you. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for asking me. It was a wonderful thing to do. I feel very honored.
Thank you.
Thanks, Miriam.
That concludes another episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. We would like to thank Sandra Linnell and Devin Connolly from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties for production support. And a special thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. You can find links to any of the topics mentioned in this episode at our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org. Comments and suggestions for future topics may be directed to us at columbiagreenmgb@cornell.edu or on the CCE Master Gardener Volunteers of Columbia and Greene Counties Facebook page. For more information about Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties, visit our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org or visit us in Hudson or in Acre. Cornell Cooperative Extension provides equal programming and employment opportunities.